Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, you can visit teacherluke.wordpress.com. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, good people of the world, of planet Earth, boys, girls, men, women, dogs, cats, goldfish, any creature, mammals, birds, whatever you are, whoever you are, welcome to another episode of Luke's English Podcast. What's going to happen in this episode? That's what you're asking yourselves. What's going on? Well, let me tell you. Normally, I have native speakers on this podcast. British people, Americans, Australians, stuff like that. And yet, most of the people who listen to this, you, are non-natives learning the language, right? I rarely have learners of English giving their voice, which is a pity because everyone has a story to tell and interesting things to share. Obviously, everyone has a chance to kind of give their voice by leaving messages on the website. But in terms of having people actually speaking on the podcast, I don't often have non-native speakers on here, right? So today, in today's episode, I'm speaking to a friend of mine called Yassine. He's not a native speaker. In fact, until quite recently, he didn't really speak English very much at all. His English, by his own admission, his English was quite basic until about a year ago. His English, as he says himself, is not perfect. Sometimes he can't find the right words. He has some trouble choosing the correct verb forms or pronouncing words naturally, which, of course, are all the normal problems that everyone experiences when learning a language. However, I believe that Yassine is quite special, and that's why I've brought him onto the podcast, despite not being a native or near native speaker of English. But why, Luke? Why? That's what you might be asking yourselves. Why are you featuring a learner of English in one of your interviews? Well, there are lots of reasons, okay? First of all, don't worry, everything's under control. I'm Luke, and this is Luke's English Podcast. That I don't even need to tell you any more, really, but I'm going to. There are lots of reasons why I've got Yassine on the podcast. I think Yassine has a really good attitude towards learning, and I want to explore that. I want to find out more about that so that everyone can sort of pick up some things and we can just explore what it means to be a good learner of English and what the right attitude towards picking up a language is. Yassine is a professional stand-up comedian in his native language, but he's also now performing shows in English. In fact, this year he's doing a regular one-hour show at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, which is perhaps the biggest comedy festival in the world. And he regularly performs comedy with the great, the legendary Eddie Izzard, who is considered by many to be one of the greatest stand-ups of his generation. Eddie Izzard is an inspiration not only to stand-up comedians, but also to language learners all over the world. We'll be finding out more about that later. Yassine is very influenced by Eddie Izzard. We'll be talking about that in due course. Yassine often supports Eddie in his stand-up comedy shows when he does performances in France. Okay, so what I'd like to say now is learning a language is challenging for anyone. You know, when you speak, you feel shy, you feel embarrassed sometimes because you don't want to be judged. You think, I don't even want to open my mouth because I'm going to look like a fool. That's how I feel when I go to the boulangerie. I just go, I've got one simple thing to do. I need to buy bread. But I go in and I'm like, oh, God, can I just go home? No, that's the wrong attitude. You've got to be confident if you want to eat, right? That's basically how it works. So these are all the normal fears that people experience when they're, you know, learning a language. But can you imagine not only having those fears, but also going onto a stage in front of lots of people who might be Scottish, they might be English people, they're probably a bit drunk.
Yeah.
It's 9:30. It's because the show is on at 9:30, as we'll find out. Imagine going onto this stage in front of all these people and delivering a full 1 hour of stand-up comedy in this language that you're trying to learn. It must be very challenging. You'd need a lot of confidence and self-belief. You need to focus very carefully on exactly how you're communicating your message. You need to be able to deal with any possible breakdown of communication. You need to stop worrying about errors. And if you do make errors, just learn from them and don't let them make you lose confidence. Yeah. Okay? Now, I want to know how Yasin faces these challenges. But also for me, these are actually all the normal challenges that are faced by any learner of English, whether they're doing it for stand-up comedy, which is not very common, or whether they're just doing it for business, or whether they're just doing it to make friends. What everyone faces these challenges. I think that in Yasin's case, they're kind of multiplied by the fact that Yasin is also doing this on stage while having to try and make people laugh. Okay, it's very impressive, and I want to know more. So this is what I want to investigate in this interview. We're going to talk to Yasin about how he's learning English. We're going to talk about doing comedy in French versus English. French audiences versus audiences in the UK. Are they different? Humour. Is humour universal or does it change depending on who you're talking to? How is good communication an essential part of comedy? How do you make a successful joke? I think it's about successfully communicating an idea. It's just the same as communicating in any other situation, really. Okay, so let's see. I think it's probably time to get started. Just as a footnote, Yasin has only been really seriously learning English for just over a year. He'd studied English at school, and then over a year ago, he sort of started doing it more seriously again. He hasn't attended any courses or lessons, really. He's self-taught. He's doing it himself. My professional opinion is that I think he's doing really well, and his English is way better than my French. And his English is a lot better than it was a year ago, okay? For those of you who are very focused on accuracy and grammar and things like that, then, Yasin might make the odd error during the episode, just like I might, in fact. But I might help him out. I might even correct him.
With pleasure, he says.
You can pick up the mic, Yasin, if you want.
That starts now.
So this isn't really a judgment of Yasin's English. No. What this is, and it's also not his comedy performance that happens in Edinburgh. What this is, this podcast episode, is an investigation into Yasin's English learning experiences and the relationship between language, communication, comedy, and learning English.
Wow! Fantastic.
Is that the best introduction you've ever had?
That's the best introduction I will have ever.
Well, I don't know about that. I'm sure you'll have better introductions in the future. So, okay, let's meet Yasin, shall we? Hello, Yasin.
Hello, Luke.
How are you?
Fine.
Good. It's lovely to have you here. How does it feel to be on Luke's English podcast?
I am very impressed about what you do.
Really?
That's a fantastic... I never seen like that kind of... what do you call that? Scissor setup?
Yeah.
With your little recorder, the mic, and the headphones, and all that. That's fantastic. That's a real podcast.
Yeah.
And I am in a podcast, so thank you, Luke.
You're actually on a podcast.
I've been in radio in France a lot, but my first time in an English-speaking podcast, and I have been in a French podcast called Radio Navo, which is from a guy called Navo.
That's cool.
And it looks again like a radio, but your setup is your way of doing the podcast. And I am in the kitchen, like in the Luke podcast kitchen.
It's like the industrial sort of workshop.
Yes,
of Luke's English podcast.
It is, and I will try to say that correctly. Brilliant.
Very good.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, great. It's brilliant. All right. Well,
thank you for having me. I learned that watching the show, having person, you know?
Yeah,
having person.
You can have a person.
They have a person. So thank you for having me on your podcast.
You're very welcome. It's very nice to have you on the podcast. Let's get started, shall we? Okay, so Yasin, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself, like where you're from, what you do, stuff like that. Where are you from?
I grew up in the Paris area, okay?
Yeah.
And so I know very well Paris. That's my a town that I know very, very, very well. Uh-huh. I grew up in France. I'm born in France. My parents come from Algeria, which yeah. is a country in North Africa.
All right, cool.
I'm 32. I'm a comedian. I'm a stand-up comedian. Professional stand-up comedian in yeah. France since 2006. Okay. So I don't know.
That's like what?
The 8 years.
8 years. So you've been a pro stand-up comedian in Paris for 8 years.
Yes.
And yeah, yeah.
I will do the Fringe, Edinburgh Fringe yeah. Festival.
Yeah.
This summer.
All right.
So I am super scared, but I'm very happy.
We'll talk about Edinburgh in a minute. We're going to come yeah. to that.
What can I say?
Well, I'll let me ask you questions.
That's, yeah, sure.
It's normally the way a conversation works, isn't
no
it?
No problem. I'll be happy.
Okay, so, all right. You've been performing for 8 years. You've got your own computer game. That I mean, not only yes. are you a professional stand-up comedian who's, you know, successful in Paris, I'm also impressed by that Yassine has got his own arcade computer game.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the computer game.
The thing is, I was in Pigalle, which is a neighbor in Paris, okay?
A neighborhood.
A neighborhood, sorry. A neighbor is a guy who knocks your doors when you do too much noise. That's a neighbor.
Exactly.
Okay, a neighborhood is a place, sorry. So I was. This neighborhood is pretty cool, but sometimes at night it's a little bit weird, okay?
Tell me about it. I live here.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know.
By the way.
I wanted that my audience wait inside the theater and not outside the theater. Because yeah. in front of the theater, sometimes they have weird guys. It looks like The Walking Dead in front of there. You know, a lot of weird person like, well. Yeah. So I really wanted that my audience wait inside. But inside the theater, you have nothing to do
right.
while waiting for the show. So I think, what can I do for them?
Yes.
Something funny, something new, and a new adventure for me, like in a creative way.
Yeah.
I decide to ask around me who can build me a video game, like a real video game, yeah. like arcade way, like old school game in yeah. the 90s. 90s, it's okay to say that?
The 90s.
The 90s graphic way, you know, with all the pixels and all that. Yeah. And I found friends who can give me a little help on that and show me the way to do it. And right. I build this arcade.
Sorry.
No problem. Please correct me. That's great.
Okay.
That arcade furniture. You can say that? Oh, no.
We don't call it a furniture.
Oh, because for me, I've seen with a lot of wood and I see wear out the screws and all that.
It is basically a piece of furniture, yeah. but we just call it an arcade machine.
Okay.
It's a machine.
I built this arcade machine and now I know how it works.
Right.
And that's great because all the... you know, the pad. You call that a pad?
The buttons.
The buttons. The buttons and the sticks.
The joystick.
Okay, so all the joystick is just a lot of little pieces, that just little buttons and all little...
wires and cables.
Wires and cables on side. And it's fantastic to build it,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
To plug all these little cables
yeah.
to the joystick, to the stick and to the button. So I'm a bit of a geek. Yeah. So I love those things.
Yeah.
I was very happy to do that. And my video game, if you're a friend on your podcast, want to try it,
yeah.
is on my Facebook page.
All right.
So maybe you can...
I'll do a link on my website. Link,
and they can play the game. This is a game... there is three levels.
Okay, there are three levels.
There are three levels.
We can say there are three levels.
There is three levels.
There are three. Difficult.
I'm lost.
Difficult. It's because there are.
Yeah.
Contracts to there are three. So it's not there are three. It's there are three. Can you?
There is three.
And that's theirs. Don't worry about it. It's not
my tongue is not okay with that.
Your tongue?
My tongue, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, my tongue is not okay with
some,
that.
Some tongues just refuse.
Just refuse to work on some sentence.
They go on strike, don't they? They're like, no, 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 we won't be making a TH sound. No, not until we get more money. More ice cream. If you give us more ice cream, we might do the TH sound, but not but today.
Not today, not now. So, three levels.
Yeah.
And the first one is write a show. You have to write good ideas and write good jokes.
Okay.
And this is a level you have to take some green bubble.
Yeah.
And you have green bubble. Inside those green bubble, you have good ideas.
Okay? Right.
And inside other red bubble,
yeah.
there seem like make you, I don't know if it's the same word in English, but in French we say procrastiner.
Yeah, that make you procrastinate.
Okay.
Or that they make you waste time.
Yeah, they make you waste time, like watching TV, watching series, playing video game, things like that. And during that, while that those activities, you are not working on your show, and yeah. that's bad. So that's the first level, okay? You have to take the good ideas and write it down.
It's a bit like Candy Crush Saga or something, that's that yeah. level, isn't it?
Yeah.
You just have to collect the green bubbles
yeah.
and try and get rid of the red bubbles.
Yes.
All right.
And the second one is the second step of a stand-up comedian show. You have to bring an audience to your room, to your venue.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have to find the audience, like Lemmings, or I don't know if you know that game on Lemmings or
Lemmings,
Pac-Man.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, Lemmings, totally. Where you have to try and get all the lemmings safely to a certain
That's
place.
That's exactly the same. And in Pigalle, we have a lot of weird person.
A lot of strange people.
Yes.
Just give you an example. I mean, Pigalle is quite a famous part of Paris. It's where the Moulin Rouge is.
Yes.
And it's also a bit of a dodgy area. It's cool. It's a great place. But there's like, it's a combination of bars like the Moulin Rouge. And also, Eddie Izzard talks about this when he's in Pigalle.
Yeah, yeah.
He says it's basically like sex shops and pharmacies. Which is a bit strange. Why is it the why are those two things exactly? I don't know. But anyway, lots of sex shops and lots of bars. And you get these people in the street who try and bring you, they're like, hey man, you want to come and see a show? And you're like, yeah, I'd quite like to see a show. But they're actually trying to get you into a sex show. And
yes.
It's very seedy and weird. And so
those guys are in the video game. So
right.
you have to reach audience and they follow you. And when you pass that kind of guy, if he say, hey man, you want to see a show, he steal your audience because sex is stronger than comedy. People prefer to go in sex shop than in comedy show. That's my rule in my game. Okay.
Right.
And the second danger is the weird people like zombies.
Yeah.
It's like zombies in Pigalle. If they touch your audience, they die. They go ghosts.
Okay. So you've basically got a kind of Pac-Man scenario.
Yes.
Where there's like audience members wandering around a level, and there are like guys trying to steal them for sex shows,
yes.
and there's zombies trying to bite them, and you have to try and collect these audience members and safely bring them into your theater. You have to sneak them past all the zombies,
yes.
and get them into the theater.
And the third level is about stand-up comedy when you are on stage, because now you have an audience and you have write some jokes.
You've written.
Yeah. My mind say, man, that's not the good time. At the same time, I say this in my mind. I say, no, that's not that.
I saw it in your eyes, to be honest.
You have right in the past. some jokes, you have an audience. And then the third level is you have to have a good rhythm. And that's my main problem. My main problem when I am on stage doing a show in English, it's the rhythm.
Mm.
And The level is funny. You have a song and just a guy with a mic, and you see an audience, like the shadow of an audience, okay?
Yeah.
You understand it?
I see.
Yeah?
And the audience is sort of in the foreground.
Yes.
So it's like you're sitting at the back of the room and you're
That's
looking
right.
over the shadowed heads of the audience, and you can see you on stage.
Yeah, the way you explain that is brilliant. So
Thanks
that's that. And you have to push the button in the good tempo.
Yes.
In the good tempo, like a Guitar Hero, you
right,
know?
Right.
It's like you have arrow,
yeah.
like the left arrow and the button, the blue button and the red button. And you have to put left arrow, blue button, click, now, okay? And if you lose it, you don't have the rhythm. And so the joke is not working very well. So the audience are not enjoying the show.
It's timing.
Timing.
So this is not only is this a fun game, it's also a really, really clever summary of what it means to be a stand-up comedian, because you've got to write your material. You've got to be very disciplined.
Yeah.
Don't procrastinate. Don't waste time. You've got to focus on the writing stage. Then you've got to promote and try and get people into your show, even though they'd rather go and see a sex show or something in Pigalle. And the other thing is, what else? That once you've actually written all your stuff and you've got your audience, you have to go on stage and you've got to get the timing right.
Yes.
You've got to get your jokes out really,
totally.
Really with the right rhythm and the right timing. It's brilliant.
And the more you have the right timing, the more you have like the good, a message work on a little board behind you. And it is like, very funny, good. Ah, oh, you do good, man. Very funny. And if you're not in the right timing, it is like lame, not good, not funny at all.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit like challenging. And so my audience can wait inside the theater playing that game.
Yeah.
And that's more fun than just waiting for nothing.
It's really cool. And if you want to play this game, ladies and gentlemen, you can. It's online. Just go to Yassine's Facebook page and you can play it there. You'll find a link to that on my website. You know the web page, ladies and gentlemen, teacherluke.wordpress.com. For the moment, I'm looking at changing that URL to make it even better.
Yeah.
It's going to be something like luketeacher.com.
Wow.
But we'll see about that. Okay, right, so cool. Tell me a little bit about learning English, Yassine. Just tell me, you told me earlier on that a year ago, all right, okay, learning English. How have you learnt English in your life?
I learned English by trying to express my own ideas in English,
all right.
And failing. So I fail and I try to understand why I fail, and then I try to correct myself. And I think that I need to heal my own language, you know, to heal my own English. Heal, you know.
Heal.
Yeah.
Heal
it. Soigner.
Like to repair it, to fix
it. Repair it, fix it. I need to fix my own mistakes by myself, because I won't be always with a teacher, you know, in life.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to understand why I didn't make the good sentence, and then fix it by myself.
Okay.
That's the way I...
Now, you studied English at school when you were a kid, like everyone does.
Yeah.
But then... I think that you didn't really use English at all.
No.
Until about a year ago.
Yeah.
Or just over a year ago.
Yeah.
What happened then?
I decided to do the Edinburgh Festival, the Edinburgh Festival.
Right.
So I tried to say it correctly, like Edinburgh.
Well, that's the sort of Scottish way of saying
That's
it.
The Scottish way, yeah.
Fine.
How do you say it in London?
Edinburgh.
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 Edinburgh. So the
Edinburgh.
Edinburgh, yeah.
Edinburgh.
But in Scotland, they might say Edinburgh.
Yeah. I prefer Edinburgh, because I try to say the way that people say it in their country. That's like Paris. If people say Paris, I say, no, that's Paris.
In England, if I go around saying, I live in Paris now.
Yeah, nobody understands that.
Well, people will understand, and they'll understand that I'm being pretentious.
Yeah.
It'll sound pretentious.
It's like exactly the same thing in France. When you say correctly an English word, everybody will say, you are pretentious, because you say it correctly. It's like I have a friend who come from Quebec, and you know Twitter?
Yes.
You know the...
Well, yeah.
Bah oui. Come on.
That's
so Twitter,
French.
So Twitter, he say Twitter. I say, so he has a French sentence like, vous pouvez me retrouver sur Twitter.
Right.
Ou sur Facebook. And he say it with the English accent.
Right.
And so everybody say, oh pretentious. That's
right.
Super pretentious. And what I didn't know is that Parisian people are known for being the most pretentious people in the world. I didn't know that. Now I know. Yeah, they're known for that. A lot of people say, oh, you are a little bit pretentious in Paris. And I didn't know that before, but now I know. So when I go in Madrid, I talk with people and say, oh, Parisians. Okay, I understand. People, you know.
What, because in Madrid, they have an attitude about Parisians?
No, we just have a reputation in Paris that I didn't know before going in London or in Madrid or in Quebec.
Because for you, Paris is just normal. It's just level zero.
Yeah, because
I
lived here all my life. So for me, Paris is a bit, it's a tough city. People are not very happy. A little bit grumpy.
Yeah.
And I talk about that in my French show. I don't know. It's for France also, Paris is like an unhappy place. A lot of people are like very grumpy all the time.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that that thing was known beyond our frontier. Yeah. You know,
I guess like Paris is one of the most visited cities.
Yeah,
so
that's
everyone
right.
comes here and they see it.
And I heard that some Japanese tourist was doing like a breakdown.
Yeah.
By talking with Parisian waiters.
Yes.
Everybody is so rude. Then yeah. the Japanese was, oh my god, and then they have. In their mind, they have like this paradisiac. I'm not sure if it's English.
You mean there's a disparity between what they expect and what it really is.
Yeah.
So yes, this is actually a phenomenon that's got a name. It's called Paris Syndrome. And it's a name that's been given to a specific form of culture shock.
That existed, the Paris Syndrome.
Paris Syndrome. It's been written about. There's a fairly well-known article, I think, in an English newspaper that goes around the internet sometimes. And it's basically a specific form of culture shock which is experienced by Japanese tourists who come to Paris. And it's very interesting because it shows us all sorts of things about cultural differences between the Japanese and the French or the Japanese and the Parisians. I think it's because the Japanese have a vision of what they think Paris will be like. And then when they arrive, it's not the same as that.
Yes.
And also, I think maybe some... I can't explain why necessarily all Japanese people experience culture shock when they come. But it's basically, as you said, a disparity between what they expect and what it's really like. I could go into it, and I hope to talk about Paris Syndrome in the future because I think it's fascinating. What were we saying?
I don't remember.
No, neither do I.
I guess I was saying that the way I learn English now.
Yes.
And I learn English a lot by watching TVs and in movies and podcasts. I listen a lot of podcasts.
Yeah.
So that's a way for me to be used to the sound of English way of talking.
Yeah,
it's okay.
Yeah, say that. Yeah, the sound of English
speakers
speaking.
Yeah,
or just the sound of English.
Yeah, the sound of English. Because for me, it was intimidating,
mm-hmm.
like you said before, when a guy or a girl comes on you and try to speak. Like
when
fast
a, when a guy or girl comes on you.
Yeah, I don't know how to say that. Like so they just pop up sometimes. Tourists that just pop up from a street, you know.
Yeah, when a guy or a girl comes up to you.
Now I understand the mistake that I've done. it's a funny mistake.
I don't know the situation.
You can laugh. I don't know the situation. Yeah, you know, with your friends and no.
Yeah, all right.
I understand.
So when a guy or a girl comes up to you.
Comes up, and up is very important in the sentence.
Two. Comes up to someone.
Comes up to. Yeah, when a guy comes up to you and try to speak with you in English and he talks super fast and you don't understand him at all. Now I can say, man, I don't understand you. And that's a human thing.
Yeah.
And sorry, man, I don't understand you. So please be more specific or less specific. Please use very simple words.
Yeah.
I am French. I'm not super good in English.
Yeah.
Please be nice with me and I will help you if I can.
That's very interesting because actually it's not just the responsibility of the one who's learning the language. Let's say if you've got a native speaker talking to a non-native speaker, they're both equally responsible for making the communication exchange work. It's not just the responsibility of the learner of English. The native speaker has a responsibility too. Because
you're totally right.
Yeah. So a lot of native speakers don't realize how they can help learners of English understand them. It's about grading the English and also just keeping the English, keeping the message simple, not too many fancy phrases.
Yes.
You know, I meet some people who, when they're speaking to foreigners who don't speak English, their approach to trying to help the person understand is really weird. So you get like, you know, when you go traveling with people and you talk to the locals in, I don't know, in Vietnam or something. You see someone trying to speak to a local. It's like, excuse me, where's the market? What time does the market open? And the guy's like, and he goes, all right, let's see. And they, for some reason, they go more formal.
Yeah, I understand that.
Can you inform me of the opening hours of the traders' fair? And
the, but it's more complicated.
Yeah, it's even
because they try to be more polite or more specific, and that's worse because we a lot of people heard English from the entertainment. So we have the entertainment vocabulary. I have that, and that's a joke in my show. I talk about that because I learn English with all that. So if you say very polite and very complicated sentences with, you know, may have, could we, that we don't understand that. You so have to be like little words and very push it, not saying loud. Don't say it loud because a lot of people say just loud things and they think that will help.
Can you understand me now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to, that doesn't
scary.
Change anything. That just intimidates me more.
Yeah. All right. So what you're saying is that because you've learned English from movies and TV shows, what people should do to help you understand is speak like you're in a Bruce Willis film.
Yeah, sure.
God damn it, Yassine.
Yeah, totally.
Where's the fucking market?
Yeah, I don't see the market. And that's great in movies. They repeat a lot of things. So they repeat a lot. Like if a guy is looking for the market, say, I'm looking for the market. I don't found the market. I'm looking for it, man. What I'm looking for? The market. And you know what I don't found? The fucking market. And then you understand it because he repeat a lot, market.
Okay.
It could work. What I do in my stand-up now, I try to repeat a lot my subject. Because I'm pretty sure that the audience will not get it the first time because of my accent, because maybe of the word, sometimes I don't push the right syllable. Mm-hmm. It's okay, syllable.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, so I know that. But what I'm trying to do is not to look afraid of what I'm saying. Mm. Because the worst thing to do is to look afraid. By looking afraid, talking, you're discouraging the guy in front of you to listen to you. Okay, you understand me?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Because you look like I'm not sure, and it's we are empathetic. It's okay to say
empathetic.
Empathetic. We are empathetic beings. Okay,
right.
We are empathetic beings. So the other guy says, maybe he's not right. Oh, I'm not sure, and then he don't want to listen to you. Even I think. Most of the time, when I have like a rubbish sentence, you know, who didn't work very well, if I say it correct with a correct confidence, the other people guess or correct me, like feel right,
okay? feel okay about correcting me.
Feel okay about correcting me.
Yeah,
and so the trade is super fair for me because I can give my message, the other one helps me, and he feels good about helping me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. So it's about being positive.
It's about being positive.
Yeah.
It's about being open, and it's about remember that the language is just the way we learn how to express the idea who are in color in your head.
Yes.
You know?
So it's not about the words, the language we're using. It's ultimately, it's about achieving a communicative act, and you just have to be positive and confident and try and help the other person to understand what you're saying. And so it's about taking responsibility.
Yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, listeners, bing, here is a top tip that we've just learned to get it right, to be a good communicator. You've got to be positive. You've got to take responsibility for the communicative act.
Yes.
And you've got to be confident. And that's a big That's a big thing. But
being confident is very hard because you can't learn how to be confident.
Yeah.
You can just try to do other things
and
then realize, oh, today I was full of confidence while talking with this guy. What I realized is that when I'm not too hard on myself, when I'm not too
self-critical,
that's the word, thank you, self-critical, I can forgive my mistakes,
right? Okay. Yeah, exactly. There's something occurred to me just then, which is like the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, you know?
Yes.
What I mean, like, ultimately, what are we scared of? Like, if you're worried about sort of opening your mouth and making a fool of yourself, no one else really cares that much. If they only true. They only care if you feel the pain, you know? If you're upset and you're hurt by it, then that's going to make everyone else feel uncomfortable too, because ultimately they don't want you to feel bad. So if you just enter into a communicative situation with some positivity and you don't get bothered by any mistakes that you made, and it's just like, oh, never mind, it's just water off a duck's back. Do you know that expression?
No.
Water off a duck's back, it just rolls off.
I understand, yeah, because the duck, okay. Now exactly. I understand, but I didn't know that.
It's just water off a duck's back, then that's it. The problem just rolls away and off we can all continue in comfort.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one will be flabbergasted. I'm very happy about that word. I was trying the moment to say it all the interview.
Really? Yeah. Just been waiting for the chance.
I love flabbergasted.
Flabbergasted. Which is like sort of shocked and surprised and lost for words.
But in a smoking. Because I learned that.
in a tuxedo.
Yes.
Yes.
Because I learned that word for people who listen your podcast in Downton Abbey,
the TV show
Downton Abbey, and everybody is in smoking, in very fancy people. How do you say that?
You
very
mean
aristocratic people?
very posh
aristocratic,
and they're all we don't call it a smoking. That's a false friend or French English or something.
How do you call it?
We call it a tuxedo.
A tuxedo,
yeah, with a bow tie.
No, really.
Black jacket, white shirt.
So where come from the smoking?
I don't know. You're not the only ones. I think in Japan they call it a smoking as well. But why are you calling it a smoking?
If I say in England, I want to rent a smoking,
they'll be like, no, California, mate, wrong country.
Okay. But yeah. They will understand me or not? No,
they'll be like, you want to rent a smoking? Are you learning English?
Yeah.
Yeah. That no, because a smoking
is a king who is smoking. Or what do you want? A smoke?
A smoking?
A small king? You want a little king to do what?
To
a little? I don't know. We don't understand you, French person.
We do sell royal family smoking royal family themed smoking pipes. Is that what you want? What do you want? And
I understand. Okay so a tuxedo.
Bingo, tuxedo. Okay, so flabbergasted is a word you learnt from Downton Abbey.
Yes, and that's a point who helps me. I think that's a point
which
helps me to learn English. Sometimes I learn good sentences that I want to try and want to say. Sometimes I learn words that I want to repeat. I like those words. Okay,
right,
and that's in the good thing, good things bucket. I have the bad things bucket. The bad things bucket, it's when I try to do something, when I am in the middle of an idea in my head, and it's important for me to express it, and I can't do it. My listeners don't understand me, or I make a mistake about a verb or something like that. Mm-hmm. That's the bad idea bucket. Okay, that's the bad things bucket.
You just reject it, basically.
Yeah, it's just like put it on off. I miss that. I feel rejected. I don't feel good about it. When I try another word, that's a challenge. That's something funny. You know,
right? So when you like try and express something and you're successful, then it goes in the good bucket, the good things bucket.
Yeah,
and a failed little bit of communication goes in the bad things bucket. Fine,
yeah,
good. You're organized.
When I try to, in the good things bucket, when I do a good sentence and I put in it like a word that I like or that I heard like yesterday, I'm very happy about that, you know, because I am increasing my level like a child, you know. Sometimes child, they learn word and they say the word for 3 weeks, you know, because they are very happy about the world.
These are all really, really good things, Yassine. Really worth just stopping and repeating, because there's we just picked up two things there. One of those things is that you've got organized. Now here's a linguistics term, a pedagogical term. You've got metacognitive strategies. Right, that's the official word.
Wow.
Metacognitive strategies. That means that you're thinking outside the box.
Okay.
And you're thinking of different, you've got different strategies that you use to approach your acquisition of language. Yeah. For example, when you successfully complete a bit of communication, you've got an organized way of keeping that successful sentence or phrase or whatever. You put it in the good ideas, the good things box, or whatever it was called, bucket.
Yeah.
So that's, you're organized. So you've got organized approach to remembering and storing successful acts of communication. The other thing was, what was the second thing?
Maybe it was the bad things.
No, there was something else. You have the bad things.
Repeating things.
Yeah, exactly. Repeating things. When you get, you're like a kid, when you learn a new word, you say it again and again and again. Yeah. That's important. You've got to use a word and lots of times before you can add it to your vocab. Yeah.
And, so, and that's what I hope that will happen in Edinburgh, because I will do a show every night. So every night I will repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat the same things. So I hope I will correct my mistakes by repeating. And also I can try new things and new funny words and new funny sentences, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
I tried that will help me to build a show, an entire show.
Yeah. Now, I guess building an entire show is a big challenge. It's also like building your English in a way.
Yeah, that's the same thing. But it's also, the more of that story, I think it's building my confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah, and understand how I work.
Right.
And that's great, because when I understand a lot of things about me by doing little chit-chat with English people, because that's very hard when you don't speak a good, very good English. Yeah. And you can go and try, I don't know, you can try new things like that. You just have to be sure of what you say, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to say that. Okay. I'm sorry, but...
It's like you just have to have like an idea. You have to have like a purpose for talking to people, and you just got to let that purpose come through. What I was going to say is that your approach appears to be working, because a year and a half ago?
Yeah.
What was your English like?
I have no English. I didn't speak English. The first time I've been in London, I was terrified to talk about anything with anybody, just French. I was with my friend, and he was always speaking in English for me. Now I'm not scared at all. You know what? Because I'm just saying, I'm talking with humans. They're humans, and they are not just English speakers. English speakers was terrifying me, because when somebody comes up to you and try to speak very fast for something they need, you don't understand it. If it's a waiter and he needs to know what you want to eat, because this is his job, okay, and he has a lot of table and have a lot of people around him, and he wants to, I don't know what, he wants to finish early, or I don't know.
Yeah.
And you can't understand all that. You're just paralyzed because, you know, oh, maybe that's my fault, I don't speak English. Now I don't think like that now. I will try my best. If you don't understand me, I will explain. Sorry, my English is not the best English that you will find in England. If you want a very good English, go see Jonathan Ross, okay?
Yeah.
I am Yassin Belhous, and I am proud of what I'm trying to do. So please, try with me, and we'll have a fantastic dish order, or not.
The ordering of the food will be really good if we just work together on this.
Yes, yes, you say that very well.
Okay, so let's see. Can you tell me about doing comedy in French versus doing comedy in English? Obviously, in English it's more difficult, but do you feel that it's easier to be funny in French or in English?
Oh, it's pretty much the same thing, but my English is a little bit less good than my French, and so I think more to be understandable in English than in French. In French, I just, the idea pops and I try to explain them, but I learn things about my French act while doing that in England. You know, I don't know if it's okay to say that. I learn about my French jokes and all that by doing jokes in English.
Right.
Because in English, I have to write every little word and try to recite this, because I'm not sure of myself. I'm not confident.
Yeah.
But in France, I was more like, I will say my idea on stage, because now I try to make myself more organized.
Yeah. So in French, you're a bit more blasé.
Yes.
Now that's a word we use in English.
Yeah. But blasé, we say that in France too, it's more word. Like, it's not blasé, I'm afraid too in France doing it.
Okay.
But
so
it's not that I jump in the river in France.
Okay? Yeah.
But in England, I'm more scared, so I have to be prepared, more right. prepared.
So basically, doing a show in English forces you to be much more rigorous,
yes,
with the choice of words, yes, and the preparation that you use. So it actually, being rigorous is really important for a stand-up comedian, because that's how you build your material.
Yes.
You go through it very carefully and you cut out the unnecessary words. You add in words that are going to be a little bit funnier. Because
yeah,
words on their own have got sort of magic,
yeah,
powers. You know?
That's right.
Like, you can tell a joke, and often it's the choice of a particular word that's going to get a laugh.
Yes.
Like, what is it?
I can say French funny words. You can say English funny words if you want.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And in France, we have funny word like punto.
Okay.
Punto, which is a car name.
Yeah, Punto.
We
Fiat.
Have
Punto.
We have kangaroo. Uh-huh. That's the same for him. Kangaroo.
Kangaroo.
Ouais, kangaroo.
Uh-huh. Kangaroo is definitely a funny word.
Panda.
That's nice. Panda in English.
Yeah. Panda. What we have? We have a name of candy that my friend Dedo say all the time in his show is Croco Haribo. Which is the name of a candy, which is a funny word.
Right.
We have a lot of funny words that help us to, you know, to make some spice on the joke.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that helps, because that's for the same for, you know, the writers, when they write a novel, the words are very important.
Yes.
And in France, I just take care about this and the idea, and then I try and I just speak. And it's okay. Things are natural.
You're able to improvise.
Yes.
You can just process in French much more easily, so you don't have to carefully write everything.
My big problem is that I can't do stand-up comedy just by reciting the text. So even in English, I have to improvise. That's the way I do. And so I have problems sometimes.
I mean, I think it's really interesting, this improvisation thing, because I find it too. If I just learn my material too much and I go up and I just repeat the lines, it's just not engaging. There's something missing. There's the improvisation, or doing something for the first time in that room with those people, creates a kind of magic that everyone can sense. They don't notice it, but it's just either it's there or it's not there. That's why, for example, that's why I try on the podcast to speak without writing scripts first as much as I can, because there's something a lot more attention grabbing in it being natural.
Yeah.
You know, because there's drama in that, because it's like, how's he going to finish the sentence? You know, you know, one man, one sentence. So it's difficult. Yeah, exactly. The suspense. How's he going to finish? What word is he going to use at the end? Sometimes the sentences don't work. You know. So there's some drama in that. So yeah. Okay. So you have to be a lot more rigorous when you're writing in English.
Yes.
All right. Okay.
And also, I remember now in English, I found where are my ideas. That means that what I was saying that like earlier, that ideas are like in color in your head. That looks a little bit hippie, but now I understand that French is a language.
Right.
But before, just speaking French, French is the language. That's the language.
It's just like the air that you're breathing.
Yeah, that's the language. Now I understand that's a language, and you can bend it, you can play with it, we can change it.
Yes.
And I understand that by doing shows in English, and I see my idea now, and I said, okay, the idea is that. How can I explain it correctly, even in French? I don't just do it. I try to how can I explain that?
Yeah. I think that's really important, not just, as I've mentioned before, not just in comedy, but in any communicative act. It's about managing the message, isn't it? And like if you're writing an email to someone, you've got to think, right, I think, for example, you have to keep it simple, be very selective about the information you're giving. Know, for example, if you put some information first, that's going to affect the way that the message is taken. So you have to order the information in the right way, putting the most important thing first, or finishing with the most important thing. You know, all the structure, the structural approach to a message, using the right words, the only the most necessary things.
Yes.
There's a rule, isn't there, in writing jokes?
Yeah, also make it the shortest possible.
Yes, exactly.
And but for email, I was doing exactly what you said, mean like a very short sentence, very practical things, not being too specific, because sometimes you lose yourself in that.
Yeah,
I was, but I realized that makes me sometimes too rough, you know,
too
autoritaire. Means like do that, mean that, that, that.
Yeah.
So I have two times now, the information, and the second times I put some politeness and Yassine-ness in it. Means that being nice, you know, how are you, la la la, it will be a pleasure if you can do many thanks, and
yes,
and the funny things with regards, yeah. Regards in French means look, so for me it's so funny the first time I read that, and I try to joke about that, means that the regards like blah 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 blah. It's just a look, you know.
Right. So right, right. Okay. Now that's good, because so your approach to writing an email is that you decide the most basic message that you're trying to do. What are the things you're trying to achieve, and then you add some window dressing to it.
Because it's important. Because communication is like a little bit like that. Mm. If you receive an email, I don't want that the other person feel that, hey, this guy is like give me an order. That's an order, you know.
It shouldn't be too direct.
Yeah, because
you have to be direct enough that they get the message that you want them to do this thing.
Yes,
but you also have to be nice and flowery,
like in your mother tongue. In French, I am nice all the time, but in English, I have to work more to be nice, like in French.
You mentioned certain phrases which you use to be nice. I think in writing an email, what you'll find is that there are just certain key phrases that you can use to make your emails nicer.
Yes.
Like, I would appreciate it if you could.
Yes.
Thanks very much for your help. Kind regards. You know,
I learned many things. I didn't know many things.
Many thanks. And the first line should be, how are you? I hope you're well.
Yeah.
Little personal thing. And if you're replying to the other person's email, you should make a reference to something they've said in their email.
Yes.
So the last thing they say, I'm going to have some Indian food tonight. Yeah. That's going to be nice. Anyway, see you tomorrow.
It's weird to finish an email by, please don't die.
Yeah, that's pretty weird.
Yeah. It's weird, so don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that.
And another thing, you can't say, I hope you're fine. That's not okay to say
I hope you're fine.
It's weird. I hope you're well is better.
I hope you're well.
No, because all the time I wrote like 5,000 emails with I hope you're fine.
I hope you're fine, sir. I hope why do you think I hope you're fine is
better? No, but now it's maybe one of the things is to be aware that sometimes you do mistake for a long time and nobody corrects your mistakes before today. You understand?
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
Sometimes for a long time, you do the same in the same, and people say, oh, that's cute, that's a mistake, foreigner mistake. And one day you realize that's a mistake. Mm. And you think that's a very fine English. And you're a little bit, pretentious about your sentence. And sometimes, I hope you're fine, doesn't work. I will say from today, I hope you're well. Thank you, Luke.
Oh, okay. So you just realized now.
Yeah.
That, see, for me, I hope you're fine is okay, Yassine. It's fine.
Yeah, but I prefer use something that who is average, you know? Can say average?
Well, not average, but normal.
Normal.
Yeah.
Normal.
Usual.
Usual.
Common.
A usual sentence. A normal sentence.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, then. Let's see. French audiences and audiences in the UK, are they different?
Yeah, they are different because but even in France, Parisian audience and Marseille audience is different. I just done some gigs in London, and the big difference is the they know stand-up comedy more than in France, so they're used to a guy with mic telling jokes about him. They know that. They know that very well, so there is no problem. They just listen more than in France. Sometimes when you do stand-up comedy, you have to explain that this is normal. I am doing a show talking about me. There is no lights and I don't have a costume because stand-up is new in France.
So you have to break down some cultural barrier every time you do a gig
in France. Explain stand-up sometimes, not every time, because now it's new, but it's known since 2006 with the Jamel Comedy Club.
Right.
So it's known that... So you have to explain a little bit sometimes. But in England, the only thing I have to do is present myself, and it's okay.
Yeah.
Just say, hello, I'm French, my English is not incredible. I do some jokes about that. And after that, it's okay. They used to respond correctly.
Because most people in England are pretty comedy literate. Because we've all grown up watching stand-up comedy on TV. It's a really big part of our culture. So everyone gets it immediately.
Yes, and that's a big difference. And also, after that, it's just cultural difference. And what I do is I cut every French reference in my stand-up English-speaking show.
So you don't talk about Pigalle,
for example. I will talk about Pigalle, but Pigalle is pretty famous because it's in Paris. It's like London. I can talk about London in Madrid.
Yeah.
I have done that, in fact, I think. I talk about London because I've seen a fox in London.
Yes.
And for me, it's like, wow, a fox. Because in Paris, we just have pigeon.
Yeah.
You say pigeon?
Pigeons.
Pigeons.
Well, yeah, in London...
We don't have foxes here.
Yeah, London's full of foxes.
And squirrel...
Squirrels. London's animals are basically the pigeons, the foxes, the squirrels, the rats, the mice.
We have rats in Paris, very big rats.
Yeah.
Scary. Not in the same that in Ratatouille. They are very nice in Ratatouille. Now we have crackhead rats, like rats. And I was flabbergasted to see a fox because I was scared of him.
Yeah.
It was first fox of my life. I didn't know if he was, he was a little bit rot. You know, no.
I mean, he was a bit, he wasn't in very good condition.
No,
he was a bit mangy.
Yes.
Mangy.
And so he was a little bit scary.
Could have been a crack fox.
Maybe a crack fox. Very in bad shape and weird look, so I was a little bit scared.
Yeah.
Like a street dog, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
you thought, what's this fox going to do? Is it going to go for my face?
Yes. Maybe. Because first fox of my life, I didn't know what to do. Maybe it's a nice animal, but he was not sure of himself. It was a very low self-esteem fox, so he ran away.
Most of the foxes are pretty low self-esteem when it comes to meeting humans. Yeah. Generally, the typical way in which you meet a fox in London is you'll be walking home late after you've been to the pub, and you're walking along the street, and a fox crosses the street in front of you, and it looks at you, and you look at the fox, and you're like, all right. And the fox goes, all right, see you later. And off it goes, and that's it. Oh, fox encounter. Sometimes you see them, sometimes you have more close, you know, contact with a fox, like if you see one in the back garden.
Okay,
and
that's where I've seen it.
You put some food out, and the fox comes over gingerly.
In fact, we were on the street with my friend, and we have like a back street. It's okay to say that? Something in, you know...
An alleyway. Between houses.
Sure, between houses, in alleyway.
Yeah.
We've seen the fox in this alleyway. And so at the beginning, we're like, wow, what is that? And because in France, you have to understand that when you are a child, the first poetry that you learn in France... is the crow and the fox.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the most famous poetry in France. That's a story about a fox talking to a crow, which is, and that's a cliche, but the crow is carrying a cheese. He's carrying...
Carrying a cheese.
Carrying, oh, sorry. He's carrying a cheese, okay, in his beak.
Beak.
In his beak, okay? So he has the cheese, and the fox is starving, okay? So he see the crow. He
sees the crow.
He sees the crow on the tree, on a tree. And he try to make him talk, and then open his beak, and then the cheese falls down.
Right.
To make him talk, he say, "Oh, crow, you are so wonderful. You are beautiful. You are nice. I think that you are the better crow in this forest." No, seriously, you are fantastic. You are the best animal that I never met in my life. And the crow says, "Ah, come on." And then he opens his beak and the cheese comes down.
Right. That's a story about being positive and being nice to people in order to get what you want. Because it is, that's the moral of that story. In English, we've got a similar one, and I can't tell you this. It's about the wind and the sun, okay? And what happens is the wind and the sun are in the sky,
yeah.
Right? And they look down and they see a man walking along the street. And the wind and the sun decide to have a competition. Okay. To try and make this man take off his jacket, right? They want him to lose his jacket, not because they want to eat the jacket, just because it's just a competition, it's just a game. And the wind...
That's a joke for me.
The wind is arrogant, right? The wind is like, I'm gonna blow his jacket off, watch this. And so the wind goes... and sends down like a powerful windstorm, and the man's jacket starts to come off, but he pulls it around him and he pulls the jacket close and it doesn't come off. And the sun is like, "All right, good try. Let's have a go." And the sun, what he does is he just sends down beautiful sunlight onto the man. All of his beautiful rays of sunlight come down, and the man, feels warm, is pleasant, and he just takes his jacket off himself because he wants to enjoy the sunshine. Right. So the moral of the story is: don't be. If you want someone to do something, you've got to be very nice to them. You've got to be positive, and that way they will then be glad to do the thing that you want them to do, rather than being a nasty, person.
Wind.
Yeah.
Don't be a nasty wind.
Don't
That's
be a nasty
the moral.
Wind. Yes. Wind, sun is better than wind in some format. Okay.
But I'm very happy to tell you that story about the fox, because that for me is like a great memories of London, and by learning some little words during that day, it make it a good day, and you learn some little words, you have seen a fox that you've never seen that kind of animal ever in Paris, and that make it a good adventure that's just not painful.
Right. Yeah, good, great. Okay, so Yassine, tell us about your Edinburgh show, just in case people want to come and see you.
Yeah.
If they're in Edinburgh and they want to come and see your show, which I strongly suggest that they do, how do we find it? Where is it? Give us the details.
Okay, thank you. It is in Fringe Festival.
Yeah.
The place is called Plaisance Courtyard. Plaisance Courtyard.
Okay.
And I'm in a little room called That, and my show is called Made in France, because I made it in France. So I am made in France.
Yeah.
And the decision to do it was in Paris. 1 year ago, 1 year ago, Eddie Izzard comes here to prepare his Olympia in Paris.
Eddie Izzard came here?
Came, sure.
All right.
He came in Paris to prepare his show.
Yeah.
And we had a little tour, so I was opening for him.
Yeah.
Then at one point, we talk about doing shows in English.
Yeah.
And he said, "I'm doing that in France." Because when we talk with Eddie, I speak English and he speaks French. So he can correct my English and I correct his French sometimes, because we always do make little vocabulary mistakes, all that. Okay.
Yeah.
And then he told me, why don't... Excuse me. He told me, why you don't do that?
Why don't you do that?
Why don't you do that? In English. I said, "My English is maybe not very, very good." He said, "No, your English is correct. I can understand you. You know, if I don't have to do a lot of work to make you work in my head. So I can understand your ideas. So you can do it in English." I go, "Okay, I have already done some little gigs with, Sebastian Marx in Paris." So
we all know Sebastian. He's been on the podcast.
Yeah, so little gigs like 5-10 minutes. So I'm not afraid to do it in English, but a Hulk show is a big challenge. They say, you have to do Edinburgh. It's a good place. It's a place where you can work and all that. And a lot of English comedians, English-speaking comedians, do Edinburgh for the whole month. So I say, okay. And I decide to do it 1 year ago. So Eddie's out helps me to do it in Edinburgh. I am with Mick Perrin. This is a producer. Yep. And they helped me to set up the thing because I don't know the place. I'm French, so it's hard for me.
Yeah, yeah. It must be very difficult. So it's on Edinburgh. The Edinburgh Festival, as you might know, ladies and gentlemen, is, as I mentioned earlier, one of the biggest comedy festivals in the world. There's Edinburgh, there's Sydney, is it Sydney or Melbourne?
I think it's Melbourne
Comedy Festival.
Yeah.
Then there's also Montreal as well, and Edinburgh, and there must be others as well. I think there's one in Austin, Texas. But anyway, Edinburgh is internationally renowned for its comedy festival. It takes place in August, pretty much the entire month of August.
Yes.
And if you go to Edinburgh in August, well, the city will be buzzing. It'll be full of people, full of comedians, all kinds of different forms of entertainment. There's comics in the streets publicizing their shows, handing out flyers. The place is just full of life, basically. It's a little bit difficult to find accommodation in August because of the festival, but if you happen to be there, then, wow, lucky you, you're going to have a good time. Lots of the shows are free as well. There's tons of free shows. Some shows you have to pay for, like all the professional comedians are doing all their shows there. It's amazing. There's a cornucopia of stand-up comedy to enjoy in Edinburgh. Right, so you're on at 9:30 in the evening every night?
Yes, every night, all month.
Really?
Yeah.
So consecutively, no breaks?
No break, one day break. I have a night off. Yeah, one night off. And I may be in a big festival in Switzerland during that night. I may be there. So like in the arena hours with 10,000 people.
Really?
Yeah. But in French, it's okay. I can't do 10,000 people. Not just me. Well, a lot of comedians with me.
Yeah.
There was a big night. In French, it's okay. In English, it is not. But all month, every night, I hope that I will meet a lot of comedians, because I love to talk about comedy and I love to talk with comedians. They're always interesting people. And I hope meet a lot of people from all over the world and try to share what we are going through by learning English.
Yes.
You know, because sometimes you just meet somebody and it gives you confidence because he understands you.
Yeah. Totally. What was I going to say? You're not the only non-native speaking comedian who will be in Edinburgh. There are others. And ladies and gentlemen from around the world, listen out, because you might know some of these people that Yassine is about to mention. Who are the other people?
This Italian comedian called Francesco Di Carlo.
Uh-huh.
From Italy. We have from Russia. And from Russia, we have Igor Mirsen with us in Edinburgh, and also from Germany.
Yeah,
because I always say Dutchland because I have learned a little bit of German.
Right.
From Germany, we have Michael Mittermeier. So yes. Michael Mittermeier from Germany, Igor Mirsen from Russia, and Francesco Di Carlo from Italy, and Yassine Belous from France.
Awesome. That's the international dream team.
Yes.
You might meet a comedian called Paco Ehrhardt. He's a German guy. He does comedy in English as well. If you bump into him, then say hello, because he's been on the podcast. He was on the podcast a few years ago.
Okay, cool.
So you ready for the challenge of like doing a show every night for a month? Because that's tough.
I have no idea. I will try everything. I'm just doing it to doing it.
Yeah.
I'm just very happy to do it.
Yeah. That's totally brilliant. Where are you? Where's the show? Do you know at this stage? Because I wonder if you know which venue is it?
The venue is that.
That?
In Pleasance Courtyard. The venue is Pleasance Courtyard.
Pleasance
and
Courtyard.
And my room is called that.
That.
That. Say it again.
That.
That.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay, that.
Okay. That's the name of the room?
That. That, yes.
That is the name of the
room. You have two rooms in a container. This is a container. We are in a container. Jed, you know
what is a container?
Container. We are in a container. Yes.
For like a shipping container.
Yeah, a shipping container.
You're doing a gig in a shipping container?
Yes, and we have two rooms. This.
Yeah.
And that.
Awesome.
So and that's a very funny place.
That is the name of the room.
Absolutely. That is the name of the room. We can do a little sketch about
yeah.
that.
This is the name of the room. Yes, this is the name of this room. But that's the name of that room.
That's
not the name of this room? No. This is the name of this room, and that's the name. Does it depend where you're standing? This is the name of that room, and that is the name of this room.
That is the name of this room. Welcome in that. That is the name of this room of the room. I will. That is. Let leave me alone.
This room is that, and that room is this.
This is this.
It could get confusing. Yeah. Who's performing in this room?
I have no idea. Because I didn't check every comedian, but I will soon. But I prefer to wait for all the show are getting on the website little by little.
Yeah,
I prefer waiting and then see everything at the end.
Yeah.
So
another person you might meet there is Alex Love.
Alex Love,
you know him already.
I met him already.
Yeah, he's been on the podcast before.
Fantastic.
So you might
see Alex. Guy.
Yeah, he's a lovely guy. All right then, brilliant, Yassine. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
Do you have anything else to say to the listeners around all the people of the world?
Have fun.
Okay, awesome. I'd like to just present you with this certificate.
I have a certificate.
Yeah, everyone gets a certificate.
Thank you. Wow. I have the Luke podcast certificate. You're doing pretty well, my friend. And now have a good night.
Okay. All right.
Certificate.
Brilliant. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. It's the certificate proves that you've attended the episode.
Thank you very much.
I'm
very proud of this.
It's not been certified by any.
This is my first English speaking interview.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I think listeners, you'll agree that he passed the interview. You're hired.
You are nice. You are a nice guy.
Well, you know, I do what I can. Right then, Yassine, best of luck in Edinburgh. You're going to smash it.
Thank you. Yeah. I hope.
The show is called Made in France. It's at that room in the Pleasance Courtyard between the 30th of July and the 25th of August. It happens at 9:30 in the evening, every evening. Suitability for the show is 12 years old and above, so it's pretty family-friendly stuff.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, so if you're in Edinburgh, check it out. If you're not in Edinburgh, I just hope you enjoyed this podcast and you can just use your imagination to just imagine what Edinburgh is like. And, you know, if you're not going to Edinburgh, don't worry, because it'll probably rain.
That's so true.
So if you're thinking, I wish I was in Edinburgh, don't, because it'll be wet.
A lot of people say that that's wet there. And it rains or it burns because it's very, very hot or very wetty.
Very, very wet.
Two possibility.
Very
wetty,
hot.
You can't say wetty.
Wetty, no.
Oh, it's funny. So
rainy.
Rainy.
Or wet.
Ah, wetty, it's funny.
Wetty sounds
I will never say wetty. Okay.
All right. Well, there we go. I think this is a good point to finish now that we've learned something just finally at the end. Brilliant. Okay, that's it for the episode. Yassine, I can never, ever finish an episode. I don't know how to start. I don't know how to finish. I just can't stop talking. So
I feel bad because I said the thing about the witty things and you were about to finish
so
this episode and then I come up to you and I said and I say wetty. Oh, that's my mistake. I will say wet now. I learned something. You can say messy, but you can't say wetty.
And on that note, it's goodbye.
Bye, bye, bye.
Thanks for listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, you can visit teacherluke.wordpress.com.
Mom. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.